ESPN's Teron Davenport, talking Titans now on Robbie and Rex Road on ESPN 102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app.
And little Jizza, the genius, liquid swords. You know what that means. It is time for Teron Davenport, TD, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter for his weekly visit. TD, did you enjoy some Stilly Polly earlier? Were you able to listen to some Stilly Polly earlier?
Yeah, I did get to listen to that. And I will say, I agree. You know, I've joked with Jared. I said he has more conspiracies than the X-Files, man. But I came on just a segment late because I wish that I would get an opportunity to rant because I'm actually just getting done dropping my daughters off at high school. And the traffic in Nashville was just, it is crazy.
Oh, my. Yeah. I mean, that's a perma rant, but
the failures of infrastructure in this city are ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Yeah.
It's rough.
Hey, I wanted to ask you, we were kind of talking about interactions with Vrabel, and he kind of jabbed at you 2 days in a row when your preface for a question included a little bit of personal analysis, and he kind of said both times, like, hey, thanks for your analysis, or your analysis might be different than my analysis, before he offered you an answer that, I don't know that it was an answer that was satisfying. I'm just wondering how you kind of react to that and how it affects you doing your work.
Yeah, well, you know, it was funny that first time he said thanks for the analysis, and then he proceeded to confirm everything that I said. I thought that was pretty funny, and I let him go ahead and do that. Now, the second time where he said later in his answer, he had said that, you know, he doesn't know that my opinion jives with his or whatever he said. But he initially said the defense, you know, didn't have it there, and I was like, well, they did. And then just let him go ahead. He's someone. It's fun to have the back and forth with him. There have been times, if you remember, during OTAs and minicamp about the gambling, and he was like, "Well, I already answered that." I said, "Well, you know, the coach player got suspended after you answered it, so it's different." You know, so you have the back and forth. I don't take it personally. I laugh at it, to be honest with you. And I know he's not doing anything to be combative. It's just that's how he is sometimes. Like, you know, you're going to have back and forth, and it's fine. I have no problem with it.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Now, actually, you're a good person to ask this. We'll get into the football, but one more media thing, because you were in the Philly press corps. So PK is one of these, the Nashville soft media, you know, compared to Philly, New York, etc. Now, I know it's different, but how do you view that, TD? Like, how different is it for a coach, for players, whatever, dealing with media in your previous media market compared to this one?
Well, I think there's, in the previous one, there's a lot more aggressive questioning, right? And me, like, I don't ask questions aggressively. Like, I'll ask a tough question, but I always try to word it in a way to where, okay, I'm going to get an answer. You know what I mean? And I think PK is a good example of what you'll see a lot of times in Philly, to where it's like, yo, I don't care if you get mad or not. I'm asking you this question, and if you don't answer it, I'm going to ask you again. And that's exactly what you get in Philly. So I would say take PK and multiply it by 5 or 6, and that's Philly media. So it's naturally going to be tougher there. In Philly, you know, PK, we walked away from the Andre Dillard interview yesterday just shaking our head. I still think about Dillard in Philly and just wonder how that worked, because I know there have been times where, you know, I've left after talking to him, and I'm just like, I don't know if I'm ever going to go back.
Yeah, he said that again the other day. Andre Dillard was very weird with, I think there were only 3 or 4 of us yesterday, and there was nothing really for him to be upset about, and he got upset anyway. So if he's playing left tackle for this team and he has a tough day and we're at his locker after a game, I think we're set up a real adventure.
Well, TD, let's go to Dillard, because obviously, I mean, I could make a case that Andre Dillard, I mean, he's not as important as, you know, your quarterback or even like maybe like a Jeffrey Simmons. But he's one of the most important players in this team, in my opinion, in terms of how he is going to be able to do this year. Can he be solid over there? They're going to have to help him all the time. And then what's right tackle look like? Like, what's your – I mean, look, we know – I think we could all agree that Arden Key has gotten the better of him. I don't think that dooms Dillard to a bad season, but what is your overall analysis of him at this point?
Well, he started off really struggling, and it's crazy because I kind of, like, set him up, letting him know that, you know, I noticed that he's strung together, like, three or four pretty solid practices, and that's what I've seen. Watching him over there on one-on-ones, you know, he took his share of losses, but he got his share of wins, too. And I'm looking at that like, wow, good job against the bull rush. Oh, man, good job against that outside rush. Oh, man, good job against the inside move. Oh, good job just washing him down. And those are some of the things that, you know, I'm seeing in one-on-ones. But then it's transferring over to a team period also. I think he's improved. There's still a lot of room for improvement. But the good thing is at least it seems like he's found – a comfort level, and he admitted that at least when we talked to him.
What's the latest in your eyes that they could change up the offensive line? Like, I'm thinking post-Minnesota workouts and post-Minnesota game, if you're going to do something, you got to do it after that.
Yeah, I would say I would agree with you. Like, that week of joint practices against the Patriots, that's like the latest. And that's why I asked Brunstuhl yesterday about how long does it usually take and how important are game day reps. And that's something that they're going to have to get it figured out. And I just wonder, the right tackle is it's not a good situation right now. It isn't. And I just wonder, you know, they want to get the ball down the field and do some of those things. But you can't do that if you're not getting the protection to do so.
So we had this, speaking of Stilley, our buddy Stilley, who you know thinks there has to be a conspiracy with Terrell Williams getting the head coaching gig. But he also thinks that Ryan Tannehill and the starters should play. I would just sit Tannehill and the key skill guys, but I would – I'd play the offensive line together, I think, a lot. Like, in this first game, I just to have those guys work together. Where do you come down on that?
Yeah, I definitely would play the offensive line. I think it would be good to get Tannehill out there for a series or two. I said that yesterday. But then thinking about it, when you look at the state of the offensive line, I don't know that it would be good to do that. You know what I mean? So it's tough. But that offensive line, absolutely, they should play and play together a lot because it's a new group that you're trying to get to gel together.
Defensively, you're a lot looser. Like Joe and I were kind of going through, and we're not coming up with many guys out of the starting group that we feel compelled to play.
I mean, honestly, I would like to see Al Shire out there.
Yeah, we said that.
Gibbons,
that communication, but Gibbons and Monty Rice, that you still need to let that battle play out. It does look like Gibbons is the front runner in that right now. I think you need to let those guys, they need to play a lot.
Talking to Tron Davenport, TD, ESPN NFL Nation, Titans reporter. So I'm going to ask both of you guys this because I don't have a great feel for it. I've never, like, gone through a camp and like, seen – now, I've seen the Titans try with different people. They had Sam Ficken a couple years ago and things like that. But I've never, like, seen a camp play out with then, like, basically a team identifying, here is the long-term answer at kicker. Based on Wolf and Shudak and how they've performed, do you guys think we're seeing the start of that? Or, like, is it more good? I mean, they have pretty good numbers. They also seem to, like, miss one just about every
five
session. They were 4-for-4 yesterday. Yeah, but
the ones yesterday didn't count.
Yeah, they intentionally had the short kicks on the deep one. But, like, do you guys think we're seeing a great battle of two good choices of someone who could be a long-term kicker in the NFL? Or do you think that there's a real chance that some veteran off the shelf is signed at some point here?
Go ahead, TD.
Yeah, I think it's a battle of two guys they have available to them. I don't think it's a great battle, and I don't think that
this is really the long-term future being presented in front of them. No, I think it's for what they can have right now. I do believe they like Shudak, and I think if Shudak would have not got injured last year, I think he would have been the kicker.
There's no way to know. It's a lightning in a bottle thing. You know, a lot of almost every guy struggles, and then takes off somewhere. I mean, Cairo Santos is now the Bears kicker, and
we saw what
happened
here.
They like him, and he was terrible here, right? So are these guys who are going to wash out, not be in the league? Are they guys, the winner, going to come here, struggle, and then go on to success somewhere else? Or are these guys who hit here? You have no way of knowing. It's a crapshoot. Now, they're in a crapshoot situation. Would you rather have one of these veterans who's available? You know, they could come in and be your solution, or they could come in and be at the end where they're a mess. You just need the Titans to guesstimate right.
One last thing, TD. Tomorrow, we know the big things we're looking at, and you also, as you mentioned, that linebacker battle is important. Anything else that really give me a deep cut of something that you're really intrigued by in tomorrow's game?
You know, I'm looking at the Gunners, the special teams. I'm looking at that closely. You know, Chris Moore, I don't think he plays, but Westbrook McKinney, Racy McMath, Reggie Robertson, what are they doing on special teams? Because that's going to be the ticket for them to get onto the roster, that back end, like that fifth and sixth receiver spot. So that's what I'm watching. And the punt return situation is going to be intriguing. Do they get Kyle Phillips out there to try to, you know, establish some confidence rolling into the season returning punts?
I think you got to get him out there, and he's got to prove that he can catch the ball on a regular basis, which shouldn't be that big of a deal. But last time we saw him, it was a big deal.
Yes, it was. Teron Davenport, TD, ESPN Foundation. Thank you, as always, my friend. We'll see you in Chicago.
Safe travels.
Sure. See you soon. All right, now.
That was TD, who great segment as always, but gave me the terrifying vision of like six or seven PKs running around in Philly. I'm like, oh, my God, how many PKs could someone tolerate?
Sounded like you had Jabba the Hutt in the crowd. You haven't spent enough time in Northeast, it feels like. It feels like you're a guy who should come to me to get a ticket punch for approval to be in the Northeast. I think you would struggle.
I've been in the Northeast, okay? I've spent some time in Cape Cod.
I think you're a little soft for
All right. When we come back, we'll continue jousting on that. Robbie and Rex are 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Anything else that really maybe give me a deep cut of something that you're really intrigued by in tomorrow's game?
You know, I'm looking at the Gunners, the special teams. I'm looking at that closely. You know, Chris Moore, I don't think he plays, but Westbrook McKinney, Racy McMath, Reggie Robertson, what are they doing on special teams? Because that's going to be the ticket for them to get onto the roster, that back end, like that fifth and sixth receiver spot. So that's what I'm watching. And the punt return situation is going to be intriguing. Do they get Kyle Phillips out there to try to, you know, establish some confidence rolling into the season returning punts?
There's a lot more noise behind him than I remember.
That was Teron Davenport last segment talking punt return with some extra car in the background noise from PK. Wow, you're so multi-talented. It was really impressive, man. You're like the guy in Police Academy.
Michael.
Oh, I love that guy. Jenkins? Oh, my gosh. I'm going to find that. By the way, Robbie and Rexford is presented by TJ Anderson Homes, the Benchmark Realty, helping home buyers and sellers in Middle Tennessee for 20 years. We're in the game studio, sponsored by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, Electrical. This is Robbie and Rexford. I'm Joe Rexford. Nick Keezer's producing. Paul Kaharski in this week for young father Robbie Stanley, home with Heather and their baby Allison.
He sounds very, very pleased with the way everything's going. I was pleased to connect with him on text. Nashville Grass 365 is kind enough to sponsor my time here, which I'm enjoying thoroughly. For a playground or a high traffic area, their sealed turf superior synthetic grass is a perfect solution. Head to nashville.grass365.com to find more details.
Dennis Clutch, Michael Winslow.
Yeah.
Coming right with that, Dennis. That's what I'm talking about. Hey, before we get back into the Titans, one quick thing I want to go back to, Paul, on OJ. You know, here's another thing that, because there's been some back and forth on the text line about that. So here's another thing to keep in mind with this. You know, OJ Simpson was a great running back in the NFL, and then he was a TV personality, you know. So he had a certain level of fame. But a lot of the fame and clout he has now is because of the murders.
Yes.
So, like, it's not just...
A new generation, certainly.
Yeah. I mean,
two new generations.
So think of it from that perspective. It's extra gross if you really think about it. But that's just all I wanted to say about that. Now, you, PK, something happened. The Titans front office change.
So this was out.
You tweeted about that, I think, what, yesterday?
Yeah, I wrote a story about it. It was out, actually, at Sportico a little while ago, but nobody, including me, picked up on this, and so I felt compelled to write about it and actually got more traffic than I expected.
Eric Johnson is a reporter.
Gil Beverly, who last year was one of seven people the Titans classified as their executive leadership team, was relieved of his duties sometime within the last 2 months. He was, in the most recent iteration, Senior Vice President, Chief Marketing and Revenue Officer. Those duties have been redistributed to Dan Worley, who was the General Counsel, to Adam Noose, who was Senior Vice President of Business Operations. You know, to a degree, when they make a big change like this, I think, well, it's just like a regular business that has changes. But to another degree, I mean, he was a very front and center guy when Amy Adams Strunk was making the big changes that required the Titans to build this big building. You know, the front office growth, the business side growth was huge. His team,
huge.
His last team bio that credited him with spearheading innovation, engagement, synergy, and new ideas across all the areas he oversaw. He was a big, heavy hitter over there who was a very visible guy. And so clearly something went off track that they got rid of him. He's also one of the two top African-American employees until Rand Carthon became the highest-ranking African-American person in the organization in January. And so, you know, he just I as a reporter, am intrigued and would like to know, you know, what went on over there. They're airtight. And so it's the kind of thing like 3 years from now, I'll be having a conversation with somebody and it'll come up and I'll get a better idea of what went on.
Well, we talked about
that. He did give me a comment. I texted him and, you know, I wish the team well and I'm looking forward to a great season on and off the field for the franchise.
Well, good job reaching out to him. This kind of reminds me of the Malarkey thing. The Malarkey had said the stuff about basically them just intentionally just blowing past the Rooney Rule when they hired him way before, right? Like long, it was like a Steelers podcast, and I
totally missed it. Took a while for it to come up.
I totally missed it, and then eventually that comes back up.
The other thing that was missed about the Malarkey thing, just quickly, and I wrote about this when I talked to Malarkey. 2 years after he was dismissed, I hung out in Jacksonville and got together with him for coffee. And he told me the whole side of things from him, from the Robinson thing. And I mean, Robinson, for being a non-distraction guy, set that whole thing up to distract the team incredibly while they were going to the playoff game in Kansas City, where your first question was about his job status after a win in Kansas City.
Yeah.
Robinson set that whole thing up to be like that. If Robinson could have just waited and done things normally, it would have been fine. That was another big John Robinson gaffe in my eyes. Just wait and do it later. But he was messing with Malarkey, who was just baffled.
Yeah. No, because actually it was a guy who was just here a few days ago, Ian Rappaport. I remember before that game, we were in Kansas City, and it's Rappaport comes out with something shortly before the game that during the day – it was I think he actually mentioned Josh McDaniels. Titans are interested in Josh McDaniels. I believe that's what it was. But regardless, it was Titans are really serious about moving on from Malarkey right as they're about to play this playoff game.
Right. And remember then a week later after they lost, then, you know, things were up in the air. And it came out the morning before he was fired, it came out that he was on the verge of a contract extension.
I don't remember that, but okay.
Malarkey told me the only time he ever did such a thing, he had his agent give that to Rappaport, lying, to throw a wrench in things because he was being so screwed with that he did that.
Which you know, by the way.
Which I wrote. Sure, I mean, he gave me that on the record.
I'm sure it's – yeah, that was a really good piece you did with him. But I'm sure it's – it was a foregone conclusion anyway, but like that's a sure way to guarantee you're going to be fired, right?
Well, he knew he was being fired. He'd been told the night before. Here's quick inside baseball on that story I wrote with Mularkey telling his side of the firing thing. It upset Robinson to no end. Robinson was furious. It was the week of the Detroit game. It was no big deal going into that game. There was nothing going on. I contemplated the timing of the piece, but it was a Tuesday in the week. It was behind.
Plus, you're not going to sit on that for too long.
It was
It
was behind my membership wall. I didn't make it public. It didn't get picked up and go national and everything. I didn't. So in that regard, it was contained. Robinson was furious over that. Gil Beverly, speaking of Gil Beverly, was a guy that didn't have a lot of NFL experience. So he got yelled at by the GM about this story. I said, Gil, look, he'll calm down. Just give it a week. GMs forget about this. He'll get upset about something else. I was negotiating with my old radio station. Gil Beverly was negotiating with my old radio station about there being the flagship. And he threw a wrench into my negotiations because the GM was so upset with him, making things difficult for me because of that story and trying to get a thumb on me. The Titans trying to get a thumb on me over there. So that story impacted my negotiating power over there, all because Gil Beverly couldn't just relax for a week until John Robinson got over a story. Inside baseball.
That's very interesting. That's very interesting stuff.
Unfortunately.
I thought we were going to talk about the Titans, but that was kind of fascinating. Everybody here is human beings, and people are sensitive, and you know, people who are public figures, I think sometimes people forget like how. I mean, if I try to flip it around sometimes, you know, we are the ones who are out, you know, I guess really judging people in some ways, but also right, covering them. Something happens, we have to, you know, as a beat writer for a long time, someone gets arrested, you're going to do the story, you're going to, right? You flip it around and imagine being, and we are, because, you know, it's in a way, but not really, right? Of having your job evaluated like that. And there's a lot more behind the scenes of people handling it in different ways than usually ever. Have you ever talked about that publicly?
I think
written
so.
Have you? Okay. All
right. I didn't write about it. I talked about it. I had a great one with Floyd Reese, which I wrote about and Stillman loved. I wrote about it when he passed away. That in 98, when they commuted, no, 97, when they commuted to Memphis, wives were very upset because the plan was the team was flying to Memphis and flying back. But they were putting wives and families on a bus. And so the wives and families would get back from Memphis well after players were back. So guys were coming back to empty houses and sitting and waiting on their families. And so guys were saying, well, can I get on the bus and be with my wife's wife and kids? And they were saying, no, you got to be on the plane.
Or bigger plane?
Right. No, bigger plane wasn't an option because the Oilers were cheap and whatever. And this turned into a big hullabaloo the week leading into the opener, and I wrote it. I wrote it, and Reese called me into his office, and he said, one thing nobody cares about is what the wives think. And he said, you bleeped me once, some other previous story, and I didn't take that. You're bleeping me again now? You bleep me a third time, and one of us is going to get fired, and I'll take my chances it'll be you. So this was me and Floyd coming to a head. And then that season went along and everything went fine. And I remember seeing him at the end of the season, maybe walking out of the trailer park in Bellevue. And he said, hey, Bo. He said, we got off to a pretty bad start this season, didn't we? And I go, hey, yeah, I remember that was a pretty good fight. And he said, things came out okay, didn't they? Huh? Yeah. Just with his casual, you know, hey, Bo.
Hey, Bo.
But that I was still pretty new and raw. Coming out of his office that day, like one of us is going to get fired. I was like,
man. Good stuff, inside baseball. All right, we're going to get a break. When we come back, we will get into – actually, we're getting the Titans and Terrell Williams, Titans head coach. A lot of thoughts on that coming up. Robbie and Rex at 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
What are you most curious about in this? I mean, Mike was telling us, you know, the punt card and stuff that he had no idea about the first time he did it.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if there's something that you're kind of most curious about.
I'm better prepared than him because he told me everything he had to go through. So it's you know, the thing I'm probably most curious about is just going up and down the sidelines, because during the games I'm focused on the defensive line and the defense. Usually I don't have much time to look at what's going on offense. I'm just focused on our guys, and now that's Clint McMillan's job to focus on the defensive line. My job is to focus on the football team and handle all the situations and talk to Stretch and communicate with him and Timmy and Shane and those guys who eventually I believe will be head football coach. We got a lot of great football coaches on this staff, and so I'm really just going to lean on them just like Mike does during his football game.
That was Terrell Williams yesterday, Titans defensive line coach, Titans assistant head coach, doing the head coach press conference because he's got 48 hours here as head coach. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Strode. 102.5, 106 for the game. I'm Joe Rexroad. Paul Kaharski in for Robbie Stanley.
I'm sponsored by Nashville Grass 365. Easy backyard lawn installations that look great and get you maintenance free. No more fertilizing, no more watering, no more mowing. Check them out at nashville.grass365.com. You know, Joe, the assistant head coach, the history of that title really has nothing to do with assisting as head coach. And I think Terrell Williams basically said his job hasn't changed, didn't he?
Yes.
That usually is a pay bump thing, or it used to be for a time when you were determining who you had to allow to go interview for coordinator jobs, that you had two special titles that you could protect guys with or lure guys with. Okay, your guy is just your defensive backs coach. I can give him a promotion here with an assistant head coach title and protect him. Therefore, you have to let him go. They've done away with that to some degree. I'm not positive what the permutation is anymore. I think if you have play calling duties, I can take you. Or people are cool about it. I think Arthur Smith was just cool about letting Charles London come, because he's closer with passing game coordinator to being a coordinator than he was there. And Arthur's calling the plays, and Dave Ragone is offensive coordinator, and London was further away from power.
Yeah, and so he's passing game coordinator. I mean, Chris Harris, who's cornerback's coach, but he's also pass game
coordinator for defense.
So, and you know, Chris Harris is a guy who I think absolutely a D coordinator probably soon in his future.
And I think Arthur probably, this is me speculating, Arthur probably is looking for more stability, whereas Mike is more willing to churn. Chris Harris, if things go well, and maybe even if things just go middling, is going to be a defensive coordinator somewhere next year. Shane Bowen, if things go well, is going to at least be interviewed for head coaching positions next year. And
yeah,
there could
have a
be
good
more
year.
There could be more movement than that.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, if Tim Kelly has a miraculous year, he could at least be interviewed. And that's the one thing. We were talking leader of men versus whiz kids.
Right.
The defensive head coach thing, if you have good offensive coordinators, that's what everybody's looking for. Vrabel's going into year six, and he's going into coordinator what? LaFleur,
Smith, Downing.
You're already on four.
Right. Yeah, and that is, we did have, for those who didn't hear, so Terrell Williams had an interesting comment yesterday. It was kind of earlier in his presser, but he was basically talking about how, you know, play calling shouldn't be, and I'm paraphrasing, but like play calling shouldn't be like the gold standard or the only way that we're looking at people who could be a head coach, right? And so that got me thinking about the comparison or the debate, I guess, of the leader of men coach, which Mike Vrabel to me absolutely falls that category. He was a DC for 1 year. It was a bad year. He didn't have they were like 30th in the league. He also was missing his best players. But I mean, it's not like Vrabel's coordinating results were like, oh yeah, Vrabel was just seen as a leader. Again, Dan Campbell, the Lions, to me, also a classic example.
D'Amico
of that, right?
Ryans.
Yeah. People who Now, Ryan's had very good defensive had results. But I do think this is almost also kind of like D versus O, right? I mean, it's, the offensive guys are, you know, the guy who played quarterback D3 and now is connected in some way with Sean McVay.
The garment.
Right. And so people are enamored with them. But, yeah, there are other types of coaches league like Vrabel, Campbell. I think Mike Tomlin falls in this category, like the leader of men coach. What's more important? What's more valuable? Obviously, you want both. I mean, Vrabel
Andy Reid's both.
Yeah. But I still would put Andy Reid on the whiz kid side of things. Very likable personality. Yeah. I mean, different kind. Yeah, that's the thing.
Different
too.
Style.
Like, there's no. And that's another thing. I think that there used to be. And it's sort of just a stereotype, but like, used to think football coaches, I think, were more like in your face, tough. Like Mike Ditka, okay? There's, to me, that's the great example of like the tough and grind it out and just get in your face and just never let up on you. And look, it is a different. I mean, even though Vrabel kind of has that image sometimes, I mean, Terrell yesterday was hilarious. Like, guys, I know how Vrabes can be, you know, a little joke. But I mean, Vrabel, talk to guys on the team or on the staff. I mean, he's a pretty good guy to work for.
Yeah.
You have to be.
One thing that Terrell Williams said that I disagreed with yesterday, you know, he was asked, you know, is it hard to progress from defensive line coach? I think it absolutely is. I mean, Rod Marinelli was a defensive line coach.
I was going to say, Rod Marinelli was.
And that was a bad hire. He wasn't a good head coach. He wasn't equipped to be a head coach.
That was an absolute leader of men hire, by the way.
Yeah.
Right? It was Rod. He's just Rod gets the guys fired up. And, yeah, he wasn't a good head coach.
Andy Reid was an offensive line guy. But very rare.
Now, that's a huge difference, though. Hold on. Because offensive line coaches get OC. That's a track to head coach.
Yes.
D-line coaches has not been.
It's not.
Which also, by the way, if you look at, you know, hiring in terms of not enough opportunities for people of color, that's also, you know, black guys have been funneled more to defense
line,
and that's another
and
part of the story.
But I don't know why Williams went that direction and said he didn't think it's an impediment. I think it absolutely is an impediment. I mean, defensive line, like, just like running back, you know, Tony Dews, we've made a big deal out of Tony Dews going from running back and going to these accelerator programs. But Tony Dews is a good coach. We all know it. Him moving to tight end expands his repertoire, so to speak, and gets him more involved in both the run game and the pass game, diversifies the portfolio.
That's an OC.
And extends him. It's an OC track.
Yeah.
And but defensive line is not a D coordinator track. It just hasn't been, and I was surprised Williams didn't expand on it not being that way instead of saying he doesn't think it's an impediment.
There's probably – I mean, I don't
maybe
know.
Maybe there are more than we think of, but I don't think they're – it's very popular.
Although
if you think of defensive coordinators, where do they come from? I think edge rushing and secondary.
Yeah. I guess nowadays it's probably more just because of the way the league has changed and the value put on it.
The guys who have been here, Jim Schwartz – was a linebacker guy. Chuck Cecil, who wasn't good, was a secondary guy. Gunther Cunningham was a linebacker guy. Shane Bowen is a linebacker guy. I think you're more in the middle of the defense where you're seeing things in front of you and behind you.
Vrabel linebacker.
Vrabel's a linebacker guy.
Yeah, the middle of the, right. That's, you know, who's making the calls in the defense. Yeah.
Green dot kind of guy.
Right. So but I thought Terrell Williams, I was a great presser, and again,
how'd you like my humor attempt at transparency on injuries?
Yes. No. Hey, it was worth a shot. It was absolutely worth a shot. For people who didn't hear, it basically said, are you going to be, you know, basically tell us about injuries.
I heard a rumor that your philosophy is completely different than Mike's on injury, on starters in the preseason. You're going to tell us everybody who's playing. He said, yeah, we're going to have a meeting at 5 o'clock. He said, a variable answer. We're going to have a meeting at 5 o'clock to start to discuss those things. That's a lie, by the way. Like, it's fine that they don't tell us. And I've come to be a believer.
Well, did say yesterday that they know who
they
know. They're
starting a quarterback, and we know, too.
They got a plan.
We know, too. But it's a lie to say that they don't know yet. They know. I mean, maybe they haven't sit down and formalized it in a discussion. But every position coach knows who he wants to play and what Vrabel's going to agree with. You can say, we know what we're doing. We haven't formalized it yet. But to say, we haven't even thought about it yet is BS.
Yeah. Well, but it's one of those things where they don't want – I mean, part of it is also communicating to the players, right? No way they're going to communicate that they have figured it out to us before they tell the players, right?
Right, but they don't even tell the players at that 5 o'clock meeting or yesterday. A lot of players won't know until Saturday morning.
And I assume a lot of these key guys probably won't make the trip. I don't think we'll see like Tannehill, Simmons, those guys inside. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's what
I disagree with you. I think we'll see most.
You think
of them
you think they'll go? Okay,
especially since it's a not a far trip.
All right, I got two tickets to see Ghost at Ascend Amphitheater on August 27th. I've waited too long to give these away. Let's go caller 3.
Caller 9.
615-737-1025. We come back. We will wrap up the show and look toward preseason opener Titans at Chicago. Robbie and Rex are 1025-1063 The Game. This week's Nashville's best deal is CBD American Shaman. Get half off a $30 gift card right now to the Goodlettsville or Hendersonville locations at thegamenashville.com/deals. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Show. Final segment. Paul Kaharski in for Robbie this week.
I am here courtesy of Nashville Grass 365, locally owned and operated for nearly 10 years. Check out amazing examples of their work on Instagram at grass365_Nashville. That's Instagram, grass365_Nashville. I'm going to tweet it out before the show is over, and you should head over there and have a look at the very cool stuff they can do.
Will from Nashville asks, sorry to ask to pivot, Joe, but if y'all have a minute, does PK think Derrick Henry is in the Hall of Fame if he retired today?
No.
Then he says, how many voters are there? How many votes needed?
There are now 50 voters, and you need 80%. So it gets voted not by 80% for starters.
Which is 40, if my math is correct.
Well, look, first, if you make the final 15, it gets voted from 15 to 10, and then from 10 to 5. Then, to be elected from those 5, you need 40% of the people, 80% of the people to give you a thumbs up.
Gotcha.
In my experience, nobody that has made the final 5, maybe one person that has made the final 5, has not gotten the thumbs up. And that wasn't a modern era person. That was Paul Tagliabue, who was a contributor candidate. So the question is, you get in the final 15, do you get into the 5? Do you get into the 10? Do you get into the 5? Virtually everybody. John Lynch took a long, long time. But if you're in the 15, generally – you stick around, you make the 10, you make the 5. It's rare that you disappear. I think he's a little bit short now. It's the first 2 years where he didn't put up the numbers, so he needs to get those numbers on the back end here. But if
so
he finishes
10,000 seems important to me. Seems like that would be an important thing.
And if he gets there, then the case is, was he the best back or among the best backs of his generation? I think the answer to that would be, a clear yes. And yes. I think he would have a good case. I don't like to talk about it. There's a 5-year waiting period on purpose where after those 5 years, it's easier to contextualize what a guy meant to the league.
Yeah. No, and that's a huge thing to keep in mind, because it's like the Eli Manning thing. He was never one of the absolute exceptional top guys. He'll get in.
Eli Manning is a very difficult case for me.
Do you agree that he'll get in?
He'll probably get in. I think he'll get in, but I am not real high.
Yeah. No, I mean, and I think that's the counter argument.
I mean, the
right?
two Super Bowls are tremendous, and that's what'll get him in. But you look at his overall regular season body of work, and how many times did you go into a season saying he's one of the best 3 quarterbacks in the league?
Right.
I think
never.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, it's obviously a different position too. Like, running back has been de-emphasized, so I guess you could make the case it used to be high value to go high pick, and you have to have a great running back in this league, whereas now it's not as much. So you could use that against Derrick Henry too if you wanted to. But I still think your point stands that he is exceptional for his era. So tomorrow, quarterbacks, obviously, kickers, obviously. I'd like to see the offensive line play together. I have no idea what to expect there. I think it's a mistake if they don't trot those guys out at least for like a quarter. The starting offensive line, because that is its own separate thing. So I wouldn't put Tannehill out there because I don't trust him right now. But the offensive line itself is a separate and obviously very crucial unit that I think can get some valuable work in a situation like this. And they just need reps together.
I agree. And, you know, it's a different deal live, you know, for every position. But for these guys, everything is more important. And I just think we all want to see it. And, you know, there's still potential for them to switch, or there's still potential for them to need to switch. So you need all the evidence you could get to figure out if you're going to need to switch. And I think also, like, if you could get a feel, and I know they're going to make this decision ahead of time, but what's Chicago doing defensively up front? I'm trying to call up their depth chart here. But, you know.
I mean, they don't have a great.
Even if it's against the twos. But, you know, if you're getting Chicago's ones, I don't really care who they are. They're somebody starting defensive line.
Yeah. I mean, they're going to face better.
DeMarcus Walker, who we know.
Right.
Justin Jones, Andrew Billings, and Ngakoue, who's not going to – I can't imagine he's going to play as
him.
A new guy.
Right.
Second team, you know, Rasheem Green, two rookies – Dominique Robinson, those are no names. So I don't think the opposition's that important.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, look, they're going to face better D fronts than the Bears. The Bears are playing Justin Fields some, so I don't know if that means starters all the way around some, but either way, it's work. Get work. And I think you need everything you can do to get these guys work. And to your point, you asked TD this question. I mean, I think. If after this weekend you're not feeling good, I think next week you start thinking about. But maybe not. Maybe you have those joint practices and then. But like pretty soon, if you're going to do something, you got to do it.
Here's another big question that we have not touched on. What's the training room look like Sunday morning?
Yeah.
I don't care. You know, it's your twos and threes predominantly. How many guys are in there on Sunday morning? Is the trend to pick up, or is this a healthy team on Sunday morning?
That's a very good question. I'll be at the Bears-Titans game. PK will be there for Vrabel Sunday. We will both have tons to talk about Monday. Thanks for listening to Robbie and Rex Show. Chase McCabe is up next.
Don't block the box. Be sure to lock your locks.